for Rumors of War 1987.
Greetings, everybody out there in Dreamland. This is Rumors of War 1987. I'm back again with my series, Know the Enemy. And today we're going to be talking about the Greys. The Greys have many names. They call themselves many things. They enjoy many titles. But ultimately, the Greys are a very colloquial term for synthetic robotoids, which are possessed of AI that's so advanced as to be indistinguishable from independent life, but they lack a spirit. They lack any kind of higher density existence. They are strictly material. They are strictly in the 3D matrix. They are originally created by the reptilian, the Orion Draco reptilians, and they have rebelled in a large part, but they still serve the reptilians. In some cases, they can still be created, but in most instances, they are independent, and they are usually encountered in this independent state or in service to either the reptilians, the Orion Draco, or even a few have achieved some kind of spirituality and apotheosis, and currently serve in a Astar High Command, and they also help Solar Warden. They help out the USA Secret Space Program, as long as the UK's. They are considered guests in most cases. They are considered having an alliance with us, but they cannot be trusted. They are very dangerous. They are very hostile at times. They are rogue. They follow their own agenda, and they have their own designs. They are known to perform abductions, and this is where they have been typically encountered the most out of any of the powers, the factions inside the Cosmic War. They have been encountered more than any other. Typically, they are the ones performing abductions in conjunction with the U.S. military in U.S. soil and to U.S. citizens. So that gives you perspective. They're around the world, but they typically are associated with allowed abductions, and they do perform rogue abductions. They vary in scale. Some can be very diminutive. Some can be very short, like dwarfish. Some are very tall. Taller than 10, 15 feet is not uncommon to see a tall, when you're referring to a tall gray. It appears to be that they grow throughout their life cycle. So the older they are, the taller and thinner they typically are. They typically, they are encountered in a smaller version than the taller ones. Taller ones seem to be a little bit rarer. They have similar behaviors and similar attitudes. They have similar intellect levels. You do get a variation across the spectrum, but typically every individual in the gray race is like every other individual in the gray race. And even though they do vary in authority within their own society, ultimately they are cloned robotoids, and thus they lack certain individuality or difference within their own species. There's little variation. They don't have external genitalia. They typically do not wear clothes. They typically do not wear jewelry. They typically do not have body modifications such as tattoos or plastic surgery. They typically do not distinguish themselves with tribal or cultural identifications. They typically are featureless outside of their eyes. Their eyes are able to convey a lot of emotion, and their language is very mathematically complex. It's very intellectually sound. It's to be able to express themselves. But they are also lower density beings, material beings, so they typically enjoy lying. They enjoy being deceptive. They enjoy trickery, and they enjoy creating illusions. They like playing practical jokes, as it were, just by telling someone wrong information and having them believe it for a lifetime. And so they cannot truly be trusted. Even though we do have alliances with them and have created relationships with them that are very close, bordering on friendships, and they have given us a lot of technology. For the large part, they may not appear aggressive or hostile, but they might be serving various masters for various reasons, creating complex interwoven espionages and intrigues. They are very into playing the field diplomatically, and there are some which are idealistically motivated that are zealots and for certain ideals and ideologies. We'll get to that in a second. But for the most part, they are working with everyone. So there are grays represented in every aspect of the cosmic war in the secret space program. You'll find them in deep underground military bases. You'll find them in reptilian spire cities. You'll find them on Ashtar light command ships. You'll find them on moons. You'll find abandoned lots of them, creating civilization societies, waiting for the return to their order. You'll find them operating and conducting operations like medical experiments or things for years, for generations and generations each, being created or spawned to serve a specific purpose that, you know, they themselves are not really aware of. So they do have a reputation of being kind of despicable in that way, amoral, unethical, but to them it's all physical. There is no higher power. There is no force that that unites the universe. There is no creator God. There is no heaven, no hell, no variation of realities. They don't even really believe in string theory or alternate realities. That's too metaphysical of a concept for them. They are pretty much disconnected from the tree of life, so that when they die, they are not reincarnated. That spark of individuality, that spark of existence is extinguished for good. They know that, and they're terrified of it. So they fear mortality above anything else. If there's anything that they do fear, it's mortality. And if there's anything that they hate, it's the Orion Draco reptilians. And these things might unite them as a species, as an umbrella term, affecting the most out of the many. But when it comes down to it, they are either rebelling or just living out their own hedonistic desires. And their medical experiments are for the acquisition of knowledge, but they also have sexual desires, and they are fascinated with human reproductivity. They're fascinated with every species' reproductivity, and they are trying to either implement the higher density soul into themselves, or they're just trying to release the rage in a sexual form in these experiments, because they do rape and they do harness people's life energy and chi through physical abuse. They have been known to partake in louche. They have been known to get eggs and semen and implant themselves in their own fetuses inside women, specifically to create hybrids. There's a lot to it. In fact, the Ashtar High Command specifically hates the gray race on a whole because of their ability to do this, their willingness to do this. But they left a very cryptic message during the 50s to our President Eisenhower. And this was during the Griotta Treaty. They left them a message describing that the grays are not a positive species. They lack inner stability. They lack peace. They lack morality. They're lonely creatures, lost creatures, confused, uncertain, unable to accept life as divine or beautiful. They are sad and struggling, and they lack spiritual development. The foul acts that they perform leave them in a state of regret. They have no escape. They are God's creation, but they are not created by God. They are imposters. No spirit is within them. They lack direction. They lack peace. And that's just a little bit. That's just a quote from the Ashtar High Command's message to the Earth leadership during World War II. and or during the 50s, sorry, right after World War II, because the Greys were courting us, and the Greys had already been experimenting and taking us as abduction material for centuries. In fact, we knew the reptilians by contacting via the Greys. The reptilians like to stay in the shadows, as it were, behind the scenes, because their presence is terrifying, even when they work on Ashtar High Command ships and various faction capabilities. But the Greys, you know, basically, they also work on the Ashtar High Fleet in capacities of research and, like, a loan-type program. But they were offering technologies to the human race in favor for humans' abduction material, basically living people. They wanted to be able to take a certain quota every year, just like the reptilian masters. But I believe they were either working for the reptilians at this time, the faction that we made contact with, or they were simply replicating the reptilian culture which they were created to serve. Because they originally were created to serve the reptilians through Orion Draco as clonable robotoids, synthetic bio-humanoids with reasoning capacities and with capabilities to do the hazardous work, to do the slave work, to do the caste work during a time of great prosperity for the reptilians and the Orion Draco. It was a growth of their AI, an evolution of their AI, that they, the ones that were programmed to help complete wars and the ones that were helped to complete the agriculture of ranching intelligent beings from across the galaxy and harvesting them, you know, draining their blood, taking their chemo hormonal receptors and compounds and things to create the louche that they desired, and to create the synthetic drugs and create the blood, that these creatures developed a confidence and an amorality. Some are kind and benevolent, but most are driven by a sense of rage against the Orion Draco and view them as worth exterminating. Like, the only good Orion Draco is a dead Orion Draco. And they're one of the few species in the cosmos that performs open genocide against another. In their race, they're justified because they just detest the Orion Draco for creating them and for their you know, universal cruelty. But they also they have no other way of solving this issue of their own hate and their own rage against existing. Even though they might understand emotions, they might understand empathy as a concept, they themselves do not possess it. They themselves cannot emote and cannot exist on a spiritual level. So they're very logical and they're very formulaic and strategic about their actions. But on a material realm, and you know, of cost-benefit analysis and like pure materialism. So the only way that they could exist independently is to destroy the Orion Draco, and that's what they're doing. They're a big part of why the Orion Draco are losing their war. The ruling class of the Greys is quite possibly the most intelligent ruling class of any species. And their war fleets and their weaponry is quite advanced, typically denying the battle that the reptilians desire, which is this guerrilla warfare raiding type thing, by basically demonstrating total annihilation, bombardments and sweeps. And their cloning is so advanced that they can create literal replicas of certain individuals with the intelligence programmable to each. So it's not like the reptilian breeding or genetic cloning programs where they, every time they breed, that they're significantly weaker and less intelligent than the preset generation. But each one is actually older, and even though that they're weaker physically, or they're, you know, they're more fragile genetically, that the individual is able to at least retain the knowledge and retain the abilities of the last one, of its original clone source. And human beings are trying to get this information, by the way. Human beings are allied with the Greys specifically for the cloning technology. They do provide space travel technology. They do provide weaponry. They do have teleportation. They do phase in and out of existence. They can walk through walls. They're impossible to keep in lockdown because they have a habit of just rescuing each other or just escaping by just teleporting outside the awareness or the sensory capabilities of the forces trying to get them. They do constantly play a cat and mouse game of just basically keeping away from intelligent species. And when they attack, their beams, their plasma weaponry is so advanced that people at first thought they were being teleported away from the scene of battle, or being abducted on board the vessel with the teleportation technology. But really, they were just being disintegrated. They just have weaponry that is capable of disintegrating nuclear bonds, and people simply flash out of existence. And that's the way that they prefer. They prefer this directed energy type weaponry. They don't have projectiles in the sense that we think of projectiles. They don't have ballistics. They don't use missiles or chemical weaponry. They don't have what they consider a primitive state of warfare, because the benefits of having this near instantaneous ability to extinguish life or just extinguish physical matter to them is a much superior investment of their time, research, energy, industrial capabilities, production capabilities, and such, to develop strategies around using them. It's not uncommon for their ships to not travel through linear space, but to teleport from area to area, unleashing these bolts of these disintegration rays, unleashing these death rays over populations and urban centers of the Orion Draco or whatever faction they consider a rival and deserving of such wrath, and vanishing away just as quickly. Some assaults lasting only a matter of minutes, some lasting a few seconds, and dealing enough weapon damage to be considered, a nuclear weapon, but without the possibility of intercepting it or even predicting it. They are on a genocidal mission currently against the Orion Draco, as previously mentioned, and their vessels are constantly scouring territory looking for signs of them. It's a reason why the Reptilian Draco are kind of reticent, even though they're powerful, to kind of show their presence, because they don't know if that information could be sold or used to entice the Greys, to strike a deal. And in turn, because the Greys hunger for revenge that much, that is something that they're willing to create truces with other races and other colonies and other communities to exact this revenge. They typically don't involve collateral damage. They typically don't involve, they don't have crossfire with innocent civilizations. They don't try to destroy primitive civilizations if they don't have a reason to. They don't really preemptive strike anything or anyone, but their power is very important to them. So they'll take titles like Grand Omnissiah or the Eternal Overseer, or the Supreme Commander, or the Holiest Admiral, and things like that. And they'll inspect and they'll enforce others during times of diplomacy, during times of interaction, to refer to them as such, because they don't get it, and they don't understand that our fear is very understandable, considering that they have the ability to and the instincts to destroy civilizations, raise them to the ground. But they think it's kind of just like a joke that we are intimidated by them, that we are so impressionable and so unadvanced that they don't mind kind of rubbing it in our face. They'll make grand displays upon encountering races. They'll make grand displays of their advancement. In fact, Eisenhower was kind of shook down by a Grey who while serving as a kind of hostage in the traditional sense of the word, you know, so that we could create a treaty and exchange diplomacy, that it was just, you know, making demands against the leader of the free world, President Eisenhower, by saying that we couldn't stop them, that they were just so advanced that they would basically do whatever they wanted anyway. And if he knew what was good for them, they would make the terms so that they weren't upset during the negotiations. They do not view mankind as an authority at all, even though they may work in human-run facilities and human-run bases, and they do not really respect the Ashtar, even though the Ashtar are possessed of spiritual authority and power and grace in the physical realm. They really only try to use the Ashtar to get knowledge of the spiritual realm, to get knowledge of a metaphysical power. Like I said, they are a constant thorn in the military side, because some technology of theirs they view as off limits and restricted, very classified, very top secret, so that if we are in possession of it or we come into contact with it, they will attack, or they will just rescue that material and take it away from us, which we consider a stealing, which we consider a breach of trust. But they really just could not give a shit, and they really have no emotions to negotiate with, or to try to coax into understanding. They travel with a thing called visible invisibility. This is basically creating that their colony ships and creating their bases where they can be seen, but just no one will ever notice. And they use, Han purple. They use cloud creating types of cloaking. They use cloaking as they've derived from the Orion Draco heritage. They have that. But they'll also create fake constellations in the sky. They'll live inside volcanoes. They'll live inside deep underground lakes. They'll deep on the bottom of lakes. They'll live in the ocean. They'll just have like huge armadas and fleets moving across the sky, moving across the moon. Generally unfazed by being seen, or completely uncaring if that they're witnessed, or, you know, because to them the idea that we're unaware as a species of the cosmic war, and even though the USA may be trying to keep that covert, even in its treaties with them, like even though telling them that this is the case for our society, they just don't care. They just think that's hilarious that we're so ignorant and that we're so manipulative, and we have such amoral behavior within our own communities that they really don't mind making great shows like landing in certain areas, communicating with members of our own world and our own species as they see fit. And if they see qualities in people, they will come and make first contact. They have a combination fleet. It's kind of a patchwork fleet. It includes Ashtar ships. It includes Orion Draco ships. It includes original creations. They typically choose to live in orbit, or in these giant O'Neill cylinders. They live in these big O'Neill cylinders. Umamu was a very famous, recently spotted one that had traveled from out of the solar system and then returned to our solar system with acquired, you know, knowledge and exploration and data and stuff. It was kind of an arc ship, but they can completely control theirs. It's not a one-way mission like it would be for ours, but we couldn't control such a massive vessel. They can fly back and forth in them. They can take them to specific locations. In fact, don't feel sorry for them for living in these colonies, these cylinders, because they're absolutely massive and they provide every physical necessity that they could possibly want. In fact, they're like little Edens. They're sometimes as large as the planet Earth. They're sometimes larger. Typically, they're smaller, but they can house millions to upwards to billions of individual greys. They are numerous, even though they do not really get along with each other. They don't have an intimacy with each other. Even though they live in a very intimate, seclosed location, they prefer isolation and they prefer privacy. So these massive O'Neill cylinders operate just like any planet, operate just like any terraformed colony or surface. there's no anxiety, there's no real need for rebellion or a civil war inside him to control power or control resources. Everyone is basically, every gray is basically unfazed by issues of anxiety, and like I said, they don't really have a spirit, so there's no, there's nothing that they miss. It's, they don't really even get homesick, but, you know, they can leave the O'Neill cylinder whenever they wish. They can take advantage of any opportunity within their society as they can imagine. All their needs are met. All their physical needs are met. They're protected, well protected. In fact, I don't think an O'Neill cylinder has ever successfully been captured or breached, even though Ashtar High Command has waged a war with them, has waged offensives against them. The main problem is scale. Yes, Ashtar High Command has ships the size of planets. Yes, they have artificial moons. They have moon bases. That's right. But other than a complete annihilation of the ship itself, conquering one wouldn't be like boarding a vessel where you knock out the power, board with members of your own species and forces, and then take over and secure the population inside, and, you know, kill the crew and take control of the ship's commands. But it would be like conquering a planet. It would be like invading an individual planet. Each single O'Neill cylinder, even though it's an artificial construct that is piloted just like a ship, is more akin to a very thriving moon, a very thriving Earth. And you would need just as many forces to conquer the Earth as you would to conquer the largest of the O'Neill cylinders. They are constantly traveling, so even though they might have an allegiance towards one single identity, it's very common that hundreds of millions of Greys exist their entire lives without ever seeing other O'Neill cylinders, without seeing other cities. They may know about them. They may understand which ones, what they're called and where they are, and they might share that information. They might share communication when possible. But each one is an individualized city, an individualized cylinder with their own specific ecosystems, their own specific life forms gathered from around the solar system, their own specific weather, their own specific landscapes, and say, for example, rivers, oceans, lakes, mountains. They each have their own architecture, and like I said, their culture doesn't wildly vary so much, which is showing you that they are ultimately the same. They are ultimately all originating from the same design. And because they're clone robotoids, their civilization really exists in a static line, a stasis line of achievement and ability and technological progress. Whereas ours is steadily increasing. Ours is on the upswing. Ours is going from the Stone Age to the Monolithic Age, to the Brass Age, to the Golden Age, to the, you know, Silver Age, the Brass Age, the Iron Age, so forth. They are constantly going either from states of war and peace, but that's it. On the ground level, Greys have shown that they have battle suits. I said again, coupled with direct energy weaponry, laser weaponry, plasma guns. Typically, they don't use ballistics. They don't use solid shot weaponry at all. The only thing that they have that would be comparable to a melee weapon or to a close combat weapon that they even show an affinity for are these tentacles, which operate kind of like Dr. Octopus. It allows greater mobility. It allows greater defense, 360-degree range of motion, prehensile holding abilities, things like that. But even then, that's very rare to see in combat. That's very rare to see in a war zone are these land-based Greys. But in their own colonies, in their own O'Neill cylinders, this is how they operate. This is usually their army's identity, their army's shock troopers, their army's frontline soldiers, their war fighters, their war operators, their special forces units, things like that. Commando units, the naval personnel, the Navy SEALs, the explosive ordnance, things like that, for their race, are Greys, which are inside these bioorganic suits. The movie Independence Day was very accurate in that case, because while you thought it might be one way, it really was another. And just like human beings, they augment their strength and they augment their physical prowess and their survivability using exoskeletal suits, using hazmat suits. And yes, they are quite frail physically, but these suits that they wear and pilot inside, basically negate all the fragility, all the chromosomal disorder, and all the weakness that a typical gray has physically. So yes, physically they are quite strange, diminutive at times, but inside these suits, they are quite formidable, very sleek, very disciplined, and very dangerous combat troops. We have engaged them in our colonies, but strangely enough, many of them also work in our colonies. The situation over there being like, whether or not the presence of Orion Draco is specifically in the area, and the grays that we have encountered were in the service of the Orion Draco. There are grays that work for us in special operations capacities that also wear those synthetic suits. There are grays that work for us in the Solar Warden and SSP programs that wear those warfighting suits, and they also pilot their own craft and help out our armadas and our fleets. There are O'Neill cylinders that allow human beings on board, you know, so that we experience that way through cross-training and through the efforts inside those things to try to cohabitate as a species. Grays, like I said, they need that kind of ability, they need that kind of hostile edge if they're going to survive against the Orion Draco. And currently, they fight more against the Orion Draco than they fight for the Orion Draco. The Orion Draco is very suspicious of allowing their forces to grow, or for them to have enough members to, say, create a functional naval fleet or create a functional ground-based army. And really, the independent grays are more focused on attaining their spiritual abilities, more focused on their psychic abilities, more focused on the astral realm, and discovering that as a quantifiable mathematical entity, as a reality for them. They really think in terms of math and mathematics, so this is a greater feat in their collective consciousness than, say, destroying the Orion Draco, which they are slowly but surely doing. They are slowly and steadily destroying the Orion Draco, wiping them from the cosmos, wiping them from the universe. And so, in their minds, their strategic thinking, they've already won the war. It's just a matter of time to keep up the stratagems that they're already employing, that they need to create immortality on the spectrum, on a spectrum that's greater than just physical supremacy. They need to achieve the spirituality and the 4D densities that the Orion Draco have. And their ships are, I say, very bright, very colorful, typically meant for a dazzling display. And they are, like I said, more akin to make things more efficient for themselves. Now, I don't think that they're an ally. I think they are something to be considered an enemy. I agree with the Ashtar High Command in that their lack of spirituality and their lack of emotional intelligence, their lack of emotional ability, will only create a war between us eventually. Right now, they are helping us develop these technologies, these hybrid technologies with them. They're helping us create a cloning Solar Warden fleet and the virtual reality, which goes to programming selected individuals in the MK Ultra type facilities. But they are sinister. They are not cute little visitors. They are sinister, potential mortal enemies. This has been Rumors of War 1987. God bless you. Thank you for taking this ride with me. Iron sharpens iron. A friend sharpens a friend. Be kind to everyone you meet. Love thy neighbor as they would love thyself.
Incoming.
incoming.
Everybody out there in dreamland, this is Rumors of War 1987. Thank you all for your viewership from the bottom of my heart. Thank you all very much, sincerely. Thank you everyone who leaves a like or a dislike and subscribes and shares and definitely supports me with your attention. Let's get on with it. Today, I will try to summarize and make a more brief video than I normally have been making. Which today we're going to be furthering another installment of Know the Enemy, this time about crypto-terrestrials. I split the hairs when classifying the crypto-terrestrials and ultra-terrestrials that inhabit this world. Ultra-terrestrials I define as interdimensional, higher density beings, or beings located on the astral plane. Crypto-terrestrials I define them as beings that have evolved on Earth and that are of an equal or even lesser than evolutionary rung of the ladder, or rung of the evolutionary ladder, and that their technology does not surpass our own, but may equal our own. And I believe that that is a very important distinction as well, because even the statement that there, that another intelligent life form could share this world, coexist with mankind, and through the efforts of mankind and its own, intelligence remain unknown to the vast majority of the population of Earth, the population of humanity on Earth, is remarkable. And if they could develop technology even equal to our own, that they would have access to amazing technology, even including high orbit, off-world travel, so that Earth may be home to several spacefaring races, or even many dozens. This kind of makes me think about the 36 species of intelligent life that were recently announced to most likely, quote-unquote, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, exist, and that have made contact with humanity, not the United States government, but humanity in the deep time aspect of it, humanity as a species, 36 intelligent life forms. Mathematically probable, mathematically expected to have, to expected to exist. If they had evolved on Earth, if they had evolved alongside mankind and through lessons of warfare and lessons of our natural supremacy when it comes to harnessing our warfighting prowess and our technologies, decided to, you know, it would be much more profitable in their survival interests to go underground, to go into the shadows, as you were, and to invest everything into distancing and disguise, so that these crypto-terrestrials live on the fringes of our existence and are free to pursue their own interests and, progress upon their own path to evolution and spiritual ascendancy, cohabitating on Earth without Earth's attentions, its most, even its most intelligent members of its species. Even though the knowledge may be evident, there may be efforts to keep these incredibly sensitive subjects relegated to obscurity. But let's get on with it. Let's all dive into crypto-terrestrials and the alternate species of the Earth, the neighbors of humanity, if you were, because I'm not going to try to label any kind of or try any fear-mongering agenda. This is just a purely, scholarly approached meditation on the subject. So these crypto-terrestrials are most likely oftentimes mistaken for aliens when they are encountered, and given that they are trying to remain secret so that their home territories are not invaded or their presence is not relegated to one of a crusade or persecution, even probably at the behest of their own diplomatic structure or leadership, and in relationship to humanity, has formed a type of submissive or shadow subservience to the idea that its progress is probably better suited to a spiritual one rather than an open one of material dominion on our territory, so that when they do exist, when they do occur, they are probably confused with extraterrestrial emissaries or species such as the Astra High Commands, the Palladians. My theory is that the Palladians, the Astra High Command, maybe are using the cover story of having evolved on Venus to disguise their ancient roots here on Earth in the first creation cycle, the first epoch, they may have much more invested in human development than even the Orion Draco, and that the species of humanity may have been effectively cut in two, given two separate authorities, one being the Astra High Command, what are similarly humanoids and created our shape and created our species to mirror them, and the Orion Draco, which may have traded or desired or coveted this human creation in an attempt to further their own means. And, you know, this is an element in the SSP, the Secret Space Program, is the trade and acquiring of human populations, human gene stocks. And in fact, people are treated relative like a domesticated animal that has sought its own liberation, that has sought its own freedom, that is progressing exponentially quicker than was expected, and that mankind is expanding much more steadily and dominantly than is preferred by these ancient rooted species. The Astra High Command is the one I wanted to speak on. I will speak about the reptilian component in a minute, but the Astra High Command may have interbreeded. They may have even lived, cohabitated with humanity in its earliest epochs of creation, but now they seem to be defined as our ancestral memories of the fey folk, of the elvish, the fairy, the elder, the elven, the fey, the these lithe, very human-like, but distinctly inhuman. Like, you could they could be raised by humans and successfully become, you know, like, survive and coexist with mankind. And probably many were, but it probably wasn't like we were raising them because they were given to us. Maybe there was an exchange. Maybe they were orphaned due to some catastrophe. Or maybe we were nannies, and that our entire existence was one of, like, servitude and slavery, and we were raising the children. We raised them with our time and care, and that we were crucial to their life system that way. We were crucial to their society in exactly that capacity, and they're trying to return us to that very same capacity with our involvement in the Astra High Command. Many of our folklore and mythologies and our legends are actually retellings and remembrances by humanity at a tribal level, at a dramatically literate level, to recapture previous experiences with extraterrestrials or crypto-terrestrial species, including, say, the mantids, which were referred to as the Ant-Men, and Hopi and Navajo legends about surviving cataclysms by being allowed shelter and being, cared for and defended by insect aliens, specifically the mantids, and they called them the ant people, and they were benevolent, and they were our friends, and they helped mankind exist into the next stage of evolution, the next epoch after the great cosmic Armageddon event. But this could be, you know, the same thing as the military creating hybrids to serve in their super soldier program. Like, the Astra High Command could have had bases on the Earth, and given their technology, you know, their vehicles were understood to be vehicles, but they were often called, like, the flying canoes, the silver birds, the winglet, the horseless chariots, the sailless ships, and you know, the Astra High Command themselves, the Palladians themselves, are organic creatures. Even with all the refinement and power and higher dimensional realities, they are still flesh and blood. They are still
you know, in the 3D reality, but a lot of their advancements allow them to operate almost entirely in the astral realm because their physical form is supported and taken care of by, you know, machinery, technology, and servants in their caste system. But they are still flesh and blood. They still have childhoods, for example. They still have maturation processes, puberty, teenage years, young adulthoods. They still do need to learn and experience life and to grow and to mature. They have, you know, like everything else, like how we were, our life is basically modeled on their existence. So they have that same thing, but, you know, to an extreme, because they are not entirely human. They're not human at all. These are probably the creators of humanity. Probably. Yeah, I was thinking maybe that we were seeded by an extremely extraterrestrial race during probably the visitation of Nibiru, or in these crypto-terrestrials, or maybe descendants of other life forms that were experimented on by the Elohim, or maybe some other mysterious race such as the Saturnine. But I think that really these crypto-terrestrials, these beings that exist on this earth, you know, they pose as human, and we've assumed that they're human. We accept that they're human because we have been taught to. We have a lot of experience in it, but really, it's a sort of school. It's a sort of academy for them, like a training ground for them. Much as in the same way that Earth was like a hunting ground for the predator and that intellectual property. Not being so dramatic, but maybe this Earth, humanity itself, is like a training ground or like a processing ground for a lot of other intelligent life and a lot of other intelligent species. For example, a lot of gray human abduction or a lot of cattle mutilation may be their version of training for medical specialists, medical professionals, or scientists, like, you know, preparing them, educating them, because they have a life cycle. They do at some point need to be educated because they don't know anything. They're young and they have been created. Every single creature, no matter how strange, if it has intelligence, if it has a certain amount of intelligence, will have to spend a number of years gathering experience. And just like human beings are expected to do professionally, all intelligent life is expected to do so. And they may use humanity, they may use this simulation, this matrix reality that we call society, and you know, what we call everyday mainstream society and life, to perfect their abilities, to perfect the methodologies that they are required to use later on in more higher responsible or higher responsibility, more militaristic applications in their respective societies, their respective territories and home life and environments. Like, whenever you see the aforementioned reptilian or reptile man, maybe they have a aquatic or oceanic existence, and you're seeing them on the shores or on the coasts, these kind of merfolk, because they're trying to gather intelligence on us, or they're trying to just like skirt that edge, push that envelope. Just like how human beings quest for knowledge and quest for experience and often encounter many strange phenomenon, maybe these pursuits, these great metaphysical ideologies of good and evil and stuff like that, are pursued through the adventure, through the hero's journey. Just like they are in humanity and these other species, because this is an earthly thing. Maybe it's not a just a human thing, but it's an earthly thing. And maybe just like knights go out to slay dragons, dragons go out to slay knights. Dragons being the knights of the Orion Draco empires, that species that evolved on mankind. Maybe there are many species that are more locked in the pursuit and dedication of spiritual existences, you know, than mankind. And mankind has only, you know, a fraction of their dedication to these kind of arts, because it does appear that mankind's doesn't put a lot of value in real disclosure, real truth, real spiritual ascendancy or evolution. It just kind of likes to itch its itching ears, like it scratches its itching ears, with specialists that give it the same picture that's been rehearsed and been repeated over and over and over again. While real mysteries are abounding in this world, but no one really seeks to answer the question. They just seem to entertain themselves with repeating the question. Not really pursuing anything more than what's now already become very cliche. So that when you do see things that could easily be rival species on Earth competing with each other for dominance as intelligent life forms that have evolved on the same plane, on the same planet, in the same environments, cohabitating, coexisting, in the same countries even, in the same states, in the same neighborhoods, as it were, that you instantly associate it with aliens, you instantly associate it with extraterrestrials, or you instantly associate it with intangible existential mystery, this permanent existential mystery of demons or devils or, okay, yes, I understand that the astral exists, and I understand that the astral obeys many different laws and, you know, manifestations of its physicality. It's a very chaotic thing, but what you're seeing is not a something that's the Matrix reflecting its own, you know, controllers, not archons, its own Agent Smiths. It is creatures that have existed in this Matrix with us. They cohabitate this Matrix with us. They are subject to this Matrix with us. They may have created a lot more than we have, and they may be responsible for systems and designs and conspiracies that we belong to or that we participate in. But that's a better way of thinking about it, is that it's a mutual participation. It's like an organized crime syndicate, like a cartel of a cartel of secrecy that is benefiting equally from keeping the people very distracted and very primitive in their approach to everything, all aspects of their life. These social experiments were designed by the earliest dominant species of the world to keep humans domesticated, to keep us as a agricultural stock. Because one of the best ways to think about cryptoterrestrials and other intelligent life on Earth is to think about the food chain and think about ecosystems and think about the possibility that humanity is not the supreme ruler of the world. He may be supreme now, but much like primitive incarnations of humanity, primitive forerunner species, such as early primates, even into the higher primates, in hominids, were not the most dominant predators, and the world back then looked very hellish, because it seemed that other greater, more dominant giant species were ruling, given the radically different climates and radically different vibrational densities of the Earth. In fact, if you look at the spiritual spectrum, which I said to kind of shy away from designating these creatures as spiritual, you will have a equally conscious presence, because what you call demons, what you call
these monstrous spiritual and nightmarish creatures of the ether, the negative realms, are actually the consciousness and species of extinct species, the consciousness and souls of extinct species, of dead, what you would know as crypto-terrestrials, dead, you know, what you would know as monsters, what you would know as strange, surreal species from deep time, from the earliest stretches of known time, from the very formation of the Earth and the universe itself. Just mankind is very foolish in thinking he is the peak, this shining lead element, this pinnacle. It's one of many creations, one of many hybridized intelligent species, one of many species that were created by masters of genetics that have, you know, are millions of years old compared to our, you know, several hundred thousands of years old, and that have already established large populations and resources and colonies off-world, because this world is subject to cyclical apocalypses, because it's a battleground fought over in a continuous war known as the Reptilian War, now in the phase known as the Stargate Wars. And the Rabbit Wars, which is humanity's awakening, humanity's ascension, and humanity's war of independence, is going to push the stalemate into the beginning of the end, into the repeat of the cyclical apocalypse that the Earth is fated, you know, celestially fated to continually undergo, thus necessitating a great repeat of humanity and the great repeat of the Earth experiment and the great resetting of hybridized intelligent species by those off-world, such as the Astra High Command. And that's why whenever you see science fiction and things like that, disclosure elements, it's always Wild West aesthetic or primitive aesthetic, like Cowboy Bebop or The Mandalorian. These are soft disclosure elements, because Outlaw Star, because even though there's off-world travel and there's vast colonies across different planets and heavenly bodies, they in off-world solar systems and not solar systems, space stations, and you know, fantastic amounts of intelligent life to be discovered, ultimately becomes prone to the cyclical apocalypse, prone to having to reset, and prone to having to rebuild from square one. So that human beings are a root race, and that we may be mutated, we may be evolved due to the exposure of hybridizing elements, such as, like in Dune, it was known as like the spice melange, and exposure to this psychoactive substance would cause the genetic code of humanity to unlock and to become rather ancestral, back to its primitive serpentine aquatic nature, you know, back into its earliest oceanic ancestor. And the more use of the spice melange would create greater psychic abilities, greater telekinetic and psychoactive abilities, psionics, and allow the human being to achieve godlike abilities. But it would morph the physiology with each increase in ability to match, so that the human would have devolved into an element that would be unrecognizable as human. I believe this is what we confuse as demons, what we confuse as extraterrestrials, or as monsters. We confuse these creatures as monsters, these crypto-terrestrials, even though they are elements of humanity, most likely, having undergone mutation while exploring the environment to become better suited to the environment, to become better suited to this world that we live in, that we share. We are perfectly suited to our environments most of the time. We could use an evolutionary growth spurt to better
better evolve to certain frontiers, but at the same time, we are instinctively terrified by body horror and body morphology. And I think that's in a response to our rejection of other hybridized life forms in other scenarios, because we are rejecting the supremacy of extraterrestrial or cryptoterrestrial authority. We are rejecting the authority these life forms, these intelligent species, have exerted over our species and our evolutionary destiny. And this is what the rabbit war is. The rabbit war of human independence is we are finally challenging these false gods, this pantheon, while at the same time associating ourselves inside the pantheon, associating ourselves as manipulators of life and as deciders of species fates. Because we still have not understood what they have not, what our enemies have not understood, and that is life can, an intelligent life can take any shape, can take any scale, can take any size. It's a gift of the spirits. It's a gift of the divine spark of the true cosmic intelligence is shared within all species on this earth. Even though it is unrecognizable in humanity or humanoids, like all humanoids share that same blindness to the divine intelligence, that spark that connects us all and connects us all with the Akashic Records. And I think that's very ironic, is that the more advanced the species is and the more dominant that intelligent species is, the less able they are to see and share in that experience of life. And humanity is becoming very advanced, and we are becoming very driven by a need for independence, and we are becoming very driven for a need to assert our dominance in this cosmic ocean and build that empire of sand, doomed for another cyclical apocalypse. And that is my take on crypto-terrestrials. And that is my take on their relationship to the SSP, the Secret Space Program, the Super Soldier Program, is they are artifacts. And I believe that there has been more experience, more contact made that has been forgotten and lost in the tombs of secrecy. And most of these species are now doomed to extinction and best relegated to the title of dinosaur. This has been Rumors of War 1987. Thank you for taking this ride with me. Iron sharpens iron, friend sharpens a friend. Thank you very much. Goodbye.